Hello?
Hello? This is one of the students.
Hi, this is Yolanda Torres.
This is Denise Williams.
Nice to meet you.
You too.
Are we the only ones on line right now?
I think so.
Okay. You're breaking up a little bit. Is it me or is it you, as they say in the commercial?
It's probably my speaker.
Okay. All right. So what got you interested in DISC?
Well, I do career coaching, and I've actually used this system before or taken it myself, and I wanted to be able to offer it to clients.
Yes. No, that's great. Go ahead.
Okay, how about you?
I work with caregivers, and I'm also looking into getting certified as a divorce coach. That's a class that's going to be coming up soon, and
right.
I took a precursor for it. It's kind of like an introduction to it, and I really liked it. I think that there is a lot of possibility there. So I wanted to get the certification in DISC because I think it'll be helpful in coaching in general, but in working with caregivers, I work with a lot of families, and I think this is a great tool to help the families understand. Exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this.
Okay. I'm going to try to put it on my headset and see if that makes it any better.
Okay.
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, you do sound a lot clearer.
Okay, I got my headset on.
Good, good. Yeah, I have mine on too. It's easier because then your hand's free for whatever notes you're going to take.
I'm so sick today. I woke up with a really bad cold, so I am so not in the mood, but I, you know, don't want to miss the first class.
I hear you. I just got over bronchitis myself. It went right through the hall.
Yeah. I forget how bad it is, you know, when you haven't had it in a while.
Where do you live?
I live in Pasadena, California.
Oh, so it's going around there too, huh?
Yeah,
I'm in New Jersey, Toms River, New Jersey.
Oh, okay. Have you taken any other, the other class that you took with, was it with Coach Alliance, the divorce class?
With Coach Training Alliance, yeah, I got my certification through Coach Training Alliance, and then I also I did the intro class for the divorce coaching.
So you recommend the Alliance certification, the Coach Training?
I swear by this school. I did a lot of research before signing up.
Right.
And so everything kept leading back to school. And I can tell you that I am very satisfied.
Okay, good.
From the customer service to the classes, you know, all around. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I take it you got your certification elsewhere?
Okay. It was a waste of time and a waste of money.
I hear you.
It was $1,500 and actually, I'm not going to say it was a waste because it was social emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So I did learn it, but I wasn't happy with the class or anything. And so she's offering coaching, but I would never go back there.
I hear you.
Yeah, so I want to see how this one works out.
Yeah, when I got my certification, it was a little cheaper than it is now, but it came out to like $3,000. It was a 6-month course with lots and lots of support.
I was on one of their like information calls, and I really liked the person that was on the information call, but I just wasn't ready to fork out that kind of money yet. So can I try this and then see if I like it, and then go back and get that?
Yeah, I know. I was able to do it on a monthly basis, and
I do like that.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, they do. I said they do offer that, which will be the way to go.
Yeah. So for the initial certification, They'll break it down over the 6 months. And mm-hmm. then you don't get your actual certification until your last payment is processed.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But you could do your practice at any point along the way of your training.
Right.
Yeah. I took my class with a gal by the name of Nan Einerson.
Mm-hmm.
And she is very good.
I think she was the one on the call. I remember her name was Nan. She was on our call. Yeah, she seems really cool. I really liked her approach. She seems like she was approachable. She had some of the same challenges that I think I would have. So I thought I could probably learn from her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she gave a lot of positive feedback, too, as far as, you know, helping you with any stumbling points. And mm-hmm. she's very tactful in doing it, you know. So.
Okay, yeah.
Well, everybody should be joining us soon, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's 5:57, right?
Yeah.
I may have to mute myself. I'm going to cough on everybody.
Yeah. Save your voice for later.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
We'd be able to turn on the...
Can I get your first name again now that you have the headset on?
Sure, I'm going to spell it. It's Z like Victor, E-N-I-S-E, so it's Vinnie. Just like the next one to you. And then my last name is William.
Okay.
And what's your name?
Yolanda.
Uh-huh.
Torres. I actually have it hyphenated as Fernandez Torres.
Okay. F-O-O-R-E-S?
C as in Tom, O-R-R-E-S. And the first name is Y-O-L. A as in Apple, N as in Nancy, D-A.
Okay, and you're in Brooklyn, you said.
I'm sorry?
Did you say you were in Brooklyn?
No, I'm originally from the Bronx, but I live in Toms River, New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey, okay.
Yeah.
My sister's in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And I have a son in Los Angeles, so.
Okay, where is he at now?
The world is a lot smaller than we think it is.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Especially with the internet. Oh, my God, it's small every day.
Yes. I thought I heard somebody join us. Is there somebody else here?
Hi, this is Mike Calhoun.
Hi, Mike Calhoun.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
We're doing good. I'm sorry. I'll let you guys go first.
So I was asking where you were at, Mike.
Well, I am in Maryland.
Maryland, okay. I'm Denise Williams, and I'm in Pasadena, California.
Oh, wow. Well, we're on opposite sides of the country.
Yep, isn't that great?
I'm over by you for the Pasadena. I'm in Rancho Palos Verdes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And you said your name is Cindy?
I can see you.
You said your name is Cindy?
Susan.
I'm sorry, Susan. Thank you for correcting me. Mm-hmm. I'm Yolanda, and I live in New Jersey, so I'm closer to Mike.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hi, this is Dave.
Hey, Dave, what's shaking?
Everything is shaking right now, seems like.
Woohoo!
Is that Christina?
It, call me Ruby, yes.
Ruby?
How are you? It's been a while.
Long time no see.
No kidding.
Yeah, good to have you here, though.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Let's see who else is here. Is Kathleen here?
I'm here.
Wonderful. And Angela?
I sure am.
Excellent. Susan?
Yes, I'm here.
Good. And Robert?
And I'm present for duty.
Very good. Robert, good to have you. Beth?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. And Venice?
I'm here.
Hi, Venice. Michael?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. Excellent. Yolanda?
Present.
Glenn? No Glenn? How about Jonathan? We're doing so well here. How about Terry? Terry? Wendy?
Wendy's here.
Wendy's here. How about Donna? No Donna? So I'm missing Glenn?
Hey, hi, Dave. Good afternoon to you. Or evening or night, I guess I should say.
It's evening time out here. That's right. Where are you from, Glenn?
I'm on the big island of Hawaii, and the sun is shining nice and brightly.
Not going to rub it in hardly at all, I'm
sure. I won't mention it. I won't mention it again. Sorry.
Let's see.
We can dream.
Jonathan? Jonathan, Terry, and Donna.
Yep, I'm here.
Is that Donna?
Yes, I'm here. Uh-huh.
Wonderful. Okay. So just Jonathan and Terry. Okay. I'm sure they'll be along shortly. So welcome to our first session, The Art and Science of Using DISC in Coaching. And I am Dave Meyer, so I will be your instructor for the next six sessions. You're going to experience something really fun here. DISC is a marvelous tool that we can use to help us coach more effectively by knowing more about ourselves and more about our clients as well. So there are six sessions here. Each session before we start it, you'll see I'll send you the slides out in email. So you'll have in advance. You can take notes on them. Anybody didn't get the slides for week one?
Oh, this is Beth. I didn't.
Okay, and that was again who?
Beth Tracy.
Oh, okay. And you didn't get them, Beth? I'll send them out to you here again shortly. Hang on just a minute.
Were you asking if we got the DISC profile?
I'll ask if you got the actual the slides for session one.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. I'm going to send these out again real quick to Beth. Anybody besides Beth did not get the slides for session one? All right. Hang on, there he is. Slow. All right, Beth, it is in the mail to you now as we speak.
Okay, I'll have to get online. I'm actually not online, but so go ahead. Obviously. Thank
so,
you.
So the other thing you should have received, you should have gotten from CTA a link to download the DISC Coaching Catalyst. You don't have that. If you haven't downloaded that, you're going to want to download that from the link because that gives you the workbook that we're going to be reading out of and using. And lastly, you should have received from me an email that has the syllabus, what's going to be covered in each of the six DISC sessions. Anyone did not get the syllabus? All right, very good. Let's check in real quick and see if Jonathan is here. Or Terry. Okay. All right, so let's set a minute here up front and ask you a simple question from anybody who would like to speak up. What possessed you to take this class? And what do you hope to get out of it? Any volunteers?
This is
sure,
Angela.
I'll see
I'd
that.
Like to volunteer.
Okay, who's the young lady speaking?
Angela.
Angela, okay.
Yeah, hi, how is everybody?
Good.
Good.
Anyway, I actually am a coach, and I work for a real estate company, and the cornerstone of my training is using the DISC.
Okay.
So
you've already been using it for some time,
so,
sounds like.
A couple of years.
Okay. And what did you decide to take this class then?
I'm always looking for a different perspective because every time I've sat in on a class where it was being taught or somebody else was training other people, there's always a different spin, so I'm really here for perspective.
All right. Well, I have different views. You're going to get some different views, that's for sure.
Good.
Okay.
And, Dave, this is Donna.
Yeah.
Yeah, the reason I took the class is, number one, I took a class from Laura Beltzen, who highly recommended you. And then the other reason is that I am also a coach, and the DISC is used a lot in the coaching work that I do. Organizations will have the coaches take that assessment before I'm ever, you know, hired on to work with them. So I'm familiar on a periphery with the DISC, and I just want more of an in-depth learning myself because I think that would be more valuable.
Okay.
Good.
Thanks.
So, you know, we heard, you mentioned here, you know, Dr. Belston, her emotional intelligence class, which also runs through CTA sometimes. And DISC is a great precursor for emotional intelligence. So I think you'll find that very handy tool. If you'd like the DISC stuff, I really do encourage you to look at the emotional intelligence class as well. Wonderful tools for you as a coach. One more person want to volunteer as to why they signed up for the class?
Oh, sure. Dave, I will. Or I won't. It doesn't matter.
Go ahead.
It's all good. It's all good. Yeah, I saw this class, or I don't know if you instructed it or it was another, but, you know, CTA put this class, had this class listed about a year ago, and that time it conflicted with my schedule. I've done the DISC before as a person who's taken it as a member of a leadership team for a county school district, liked it a lot. Of course, that's years gone by. I now have a social emotional intelligence coaching practice, and this is just another tool I want to add into the bag to be able to use with some of my clients, and also, of course, to do obviously elite management team trainings on and stuff. So I just jumped at the opportunity. It was very reasonably priced, and I'm excited about the possibility of being able to use this in my practice.
Wonderful. That was Glenn speaking. Is that correct?
Yeah. Aloha.
Okay, good. Good. So,
yeah, this is Yolanda.
Yes, Yolanda.
Hello? Hi, I'm sorry, Dave. This is Yolanda. I was just going to say it would be helpful if you don't mind saying your name before you speak so we can get a sense of who everybody is, if you guys don't mind.
Absolutely.
Okay?
That way we can tell who's talking and how they're contributing to the class.
Thank you.
So there are a lot of reasons to think about using DISC as in your coaching practice. And ideally sit there and say, yeah, I get insights into my clients. It helps me coach them more effectively. You also get insights into yourself, some of your natural tendencies that you have as a coach to use with your clients. But I have to be very honest here in that in my practice, I used DISC as a marketing tool. And I gave away a lot of DISC profiles that cost me a minimum amount of money and turned them into $5,000 and $6,000 workshops and turned those workshops into one-on-one coaching clients to help them use DISC in their practice or in their business to make themselves more effective. So it's a wonderful tool. And you can use it a lot of different ways, again, to tell about yourself, about your clients, but also as a way to bring clients on board. Especially in the business world, people like to have things they can touch and look at and read, and DISC is a great tool that way. So, any questions before we start getting into today's material? We have a lot to cover in our first hour here, so any other questions before we get started, though?
I have a question, not about the material so far, but what you just mentioned. I would love it if you would take the time in our last session to, if you could, and I don't know if you have that budgeted in there. I didn't see it on the syllabus, to have a conversation just about what you experienced and what worked for you in incorporating that into marketing, how you went about doing that successful or what was not successful for you, et cetera. I would love to hear from your experience.
Okay. And that was Glenn again. Is that correct?
Sorry. Yeah, it's Glenn.
All right. So I'll make you guys a deal. We can only cover so much in 6 hours. If there are things that pop into your mind that you'd like to talk about that are not part of our syllabus, part of our discussions, if you'll let me know either like we did here at the start of class, or through an email. What I'll try and do is stay after class one night and answer questions about some of those things. So I'll announce at the start of class that, you know, if you want to stay after the class tonight, you can talk about marketing through DISC or DISC and workshops, that kind of thing. And if you want to hang around for that, you can do that. If you want to get off the phone and go have dinner, you can do that as well. Just let me know what you guys need, and I'll do my best to provide it to you. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. One last pass here. Is Jonathan here? Or Terry? I won't take that personally, probably at all. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the history and background of DISC. If you look at your slides, you can see that we talk about Dr. William Moulton Marston, and you read about him, of course, in the reading for tonight, and his 1928 book, The Emotions of Normal People. Now, one of the things important to understand about Dr. Marston and the work that he did is that while his book is used to create the assessment, he had no idea that this ever turned into an assessment. That was not his goal. It was not what he was trying to accomplish. It was not even something he could easily do back in 1928. So the assessment was created much later, a different environment entirely, and we'll talk a little more about that a little later on in the class. But it was just his theories that were used to create how people reacted, and he based it on the environment. And we'll get into that in some detail here in a few minutes, but I want to also mention that even back in 1928, these theories were really not new theories. If I talk about a guy named Hippocrates, anybody know who Hippocrates was?
Greek philosopher.
A Greek philosopher. What's he most famous for?
Oh, medical oath.
Yeah, the Hippocratic Oath, which starts with, first, do no harm.
Right.
But he also had some theories about behavior that were very closely aligned with Dr. Marston. He talked about people being choleric, sanguine, phlegmatic, and melancholy. And those correspond very closely to the same four quadrants that Dr. Marston's model later turned into. Dr. Marston's book talks about how people react to the environment around them. And basically what he said was people view themselves as more powerful than the environment around them. Therefore, they can affect the environment. Other folks said, I'm just a little guy out here. What is, I have to accept things as they are. Also, people looked at things and said, I live in a primarily positive place. And isn't that great? The world is a beautiful place. I love life. Other folks said, you know what? This is not a good place to be. There's danger all around. And the world I live in is a place where I need to be very careful. So those theories turned into Dr. Marston's book about how we actually go about creating the DISC model. Now, Dr. Marston was also famous for things besides the 1928 book, The Emotions of Normal People. Anybody else know what Dr. Marston was famous for besides that book?
I do not.
No.
Okay. Well, it's a little different. His work led to the invention of the lie detector.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, based on people's reactions and their natural behaviors. Now, in addition to the lie detector, which, of course, is a little different than what we have here so far, he and his wife also invented the character Wonder Woman.
Good man.
Marston's beliefs were that women especially in the 1920s, were very much undervalued. So he and his wife created Wonder Woman to help them show how powerful women could be if they so desired. I just tell you that to get a better feel for what Dr. Marston's all about. He's a very broad thinker, not limited to just a nerd in a lab coat saying, how do people behave in life? Now, look at the next page of your handouts. You'll see the start of the model of Marston's theories. And the theories he has here about the environment are not necessarily the same ones that are used in today's DISC model, but they're really very closely related. And sometimes personally, when I'm having talking to somebody and I'm thinking to myself, what is their DISC behavioral style? And I can't relate it back to the current DISC theories. I relate it back to the theories of environment. Helps me sort through it a little easier. So you can see on the work, on the handout there, there's this issue of people see themselves as more powerful than the environment or less powerful. And think about that. People that you've met, if I sit there and say, yeah, they view themselves as someone who can affect things or someone who is kind of a, I don't use the term victim necessarily, but can't affect what's going on around them. They don't have the control over it.
More complacent?
More complacent, more accepting of what is. Yeah. So that's the top and bottom of the scale. On the right and left is the favorable versus unfavorable. Now, someone here tell me about, if you think that you live in a favorable environment, what does that do to your behaviors?
Oh, it makes your behaviors, you're less fearful.
Like you're less fearful?
Yeah, all around more accepting of what is around you, more playful, more interactive, more risk-taking, etc.
Good. And who was speaking again?
I'm sorry. Aloha. That's Glenn. Well, I said I wasn't going to do that.
Aloha, Glenn. This is Yolanda. When I hear that that phrase, perceive a favorable environment, it makes me think of the other phrase that if you do what you love, it's not work.
Ah, okay. Good. Huh. And so relate that back to the to people in the world.
Okay.
How do you think about people who say, yeah, I'm doing what I love versus I'm doing what I have to do.
You know, some folks have,
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I think that that really relates to doing what I have to do is perceived that I don't have a power of control. So I'm doing what is necessary to take care of whatever, however you want to define it. And doing what I love to do is means that I have a choice in the matter. I have some power over those decisions. I have control over my destiny and my environment.
So I love what I do when I go to work, and isn't it great? Versus, oh, here we go again. Another day, another dollar. I owe, so off to work I go. I don't really want to be doing this. Or, yes, I have been married for X number of years. Do I love my spouse? Well, you know, not really, but, you know, what are you going to do? Or, I love my spouse. Boy, they're the center of my life, and so glad I met this person. So, before I go further, I'm making one key point here. There is a discussion we have all the time about behaviors. It's really important to understand that DISC is measuring behaviors. DISC is not measuring personality. It's not psychological. It's how people behave in public or in private, how they demonstrate things. So we all fall into the trap, including yours truly, of saying, personality.
Ah, okay.
But let's remember, this is about behaviors, what we show, what we demonstrate, not the thought, not necessarily the psychology behind that.
So let me ask, this is Glenn, can I ask a clarifying question on that?
Absolutely.
So the assessments and the words selected, you know, in the assessment, although those are somewhat actionable words, I mean, you know, and this is how I would treat it or what I would do, how do you tie that, someone's perception of what they believe that this is what they would do, how do you correlate that directly to a behavior? That's a tough one for me. I get what you said about this. It's a tough one for me to make that jump to it when, you know, through all the training I've ever had is that, you know, behaviors, you know, are only measurable really, truly when the situation's really upon the person.
Right. Right. So a psychological tool measures the reasons why people do things, what's going on beneath the surface that way.
Okay.
This assessment will measure like what you're likely to see on the outside. So,
okay.
A quick example, you may see someone who comes across as a little brusque, a little abrasive, and a little tough to deal with. You say to himself, boy, they don't like people very much, do they? And reality may be very different. Reality may be they love people. But their expression on the outside, the behavior, does not appear to match that.
Okay.
And that's what leads to some confusion between behaviors and personality. It's easier to modify a person's behaviors than
yeah.
their personality.
Yes.
Yeah. Dave, Bob Kramer.
Yeah, Rob.
Yeah. Hi. Point of clarification. If you look at the catalyst document you gave us, it does refer to DISC as personality, and I think it needs to be looked at and reviewed, maybe updated.
That means you have an old version because the version that's been out there for about 2 years now doesn't.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So I'll have to talk to CTA because they're sending out an
yeah.
incorrect
yeah.
version.
They definitely are. Yeah.
Because I got the same.
Yeah, well, I'm sure when I sent the update a couple of years ago, they put it in the wrong place and they're not using the right one. So wherever you see the word personality, except for three or four places where it refers to a television personality, as an example, so those things should all be changed to behaviors. And I'll actually call CTA and let them know that the problem is they can give you guys a new link to download a new version.
Okay, thank
okay.
you.
I'm glad you pointed out to me. I can get that corrected for them. All right. Let's take a minute here and look at that behavioral style, though, in terms of Marston's theories. So if you look at Marston's four-quadrant model, you are more powerful than the environment, and it's probably an unfavorable environment to you. So that top left-hand quadrant, the thought process here is, things aren't so great, hey, but I can fix this. The upper right-hand quadrant where it says, I'm more powerful and it's favorable, that's a situation where you sit there and go like, isn't life fun? All these great things happen and I can impact it by even more fun. The lower right-hand quadrant where it is less powerful than the environment, but still favorable, that's, well, things are pretty good here. I hope things stay that way. And last but not least, the lower left-hand quadrant, I'm less powerful and it's unfavorable. Wow, this is not a good place to be. I better protect myself somehow to make sure everything works out for me. We're going to relate that back here to the DISC model from used in modern-day behavioral styles in just a few moments here. So let's talk for a minute here about how DISC evolved. You guys all read about it, right?
Yes.
Anybody want to relate the story of how DISC evolved to the class here?
I
Anybody? Bueller? Supposed to be a joke, folks. They laughed.
I couldn't tell on my cell phone. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm afraid because we got the book today. I don't know how many of us got through the 20 pages, but or 27. But you know, so I'm not sure how far along that is in the book.
All right.
Yeah, well, this is Bob. All it says in the book is the University of Minnesota created it.
All right. So, well, you guys have a version that's a little updating. So it was created at the University of Minnesota in 1972. Now, do you guys recall what 1972 was like?
No.
Harry?
It was before the days of personal computers. Back in the days when computers took up entire rooms. Right?
Yeah.
So research was painstaking, to say the least. Okay? And then they created the model. They created it. They created the assessment. They created the model first. They built the assessment to match that. And they used something called forced choice in the model. And the idea here when it's forced choice is that you're actually sitting there saying, okay, I must choose. I don't like some of these options, but I must choose versus, for example, a sliding scale. On a scale of 1 to 5, where would you say you fit in this word? Sometimes, never, always? Now, the problem with sliding scales is that some people are never going to use the word always because you know what? Nothing's always true. Likewise, something's never always. Never true. Therefore, I must respond someplace in 2, 3, or 4.
Makes
so the forced choice that's used there is done intentionally to force you to respond to something, whether you like it or not, in a definitive way. Now, you also find that sometimes look at that word and say, you know what, all four of those words are just like me. Or all four of those words are not like me. So, again, forced choice is designed to make you sit there and say, okay, I can only choose one most. I can only choose one least. I got to decide. Now, I'll also tell you that normally when I provide assessments, I try and do it in a timed environment. I want folks to spend no more than 10 minutes on the entire assessment. Any more than 10 minutes, what starts happening?
You start analyzing your response.
Exactly. Analyze your response. You try to figure out what's going on. You start questioning yourself. You start going back and changing answers. We're looking for a quick response. What's most like you and least like you. And actually, when I do this with groups, I do it in paper, which I'll discuss. Please do it in paper later on. I literally put a timer on the screen and count down. And I give them 8 minutes, actually. And it counts down. I tell them, you've got 2 minutes left. People have to speed up to get done. I don't want them thinking. I just want them to react to the words, give me their responses, and not try and analyze it. Now, also I'll tell you that the profile that I use from Inkscape Publishing is one where they have PhDs on staff. And they're constantly, looking at these words and analyzing them. They don't change them every time we turn around, but they analyze to make sure that they're still relevant to today's DISC profile and today's world. You're going to find a lot of assessments out there that are that look like DISC. Sometimes talk about colors or animals or flowers, and they're based on the same core work, if you will, but they're not tested regularly to make sure that they're still relevant to us. And that's why I like DISC, Pure DISC this way, especially Inkscape Publishing. Now, I'll also tell you that, I mentioned the University of Minnesota, there were two researchers there who primarily created the DISC model that we're using. And after about 10 years working together, these guys broke apart and formed two different companies. And Inkscape Publishing can trace its roots back to one of the two original publishers of a disk profile. That's the reason why I like it. But a lot of them produce things that are like disk, but Inkscape is one of the ones that says, yes, we are originally from the original profiles. All right, so look at today's disk model. And you've got active, thoughtful, questioning, accepting. And by the way, where it says questioning, you can also put task orientation in there. You'll oftentimes see it done exactly that way. Likewise, accepting, sometimes it's referred to as a people orientation.
Okay.
Well, Dr. Barson's model talked about the environment, more powerful, less powerful. The current model talks about I'm more active, I'm more outgoing, I'm a little louder, I'm a little more get things done type person, versus I'm thoughtful. I'm going to think about things, I'm a little more passive, a little more willing to accept things the way they are. Likewise, the accepting or people-oriented, you know, tends to be focused more on how I react to people around me and interactions with them. Again, behaviors, not the thoughts. And questioning and tasks relates back to how I interact with people around me. Do I think about tasks first and then the people, or people first and then the tasks? We're going to cover that in more detail as we go on here. But I want you guys to kind of get a feel for how the two models interrelate. So you look at the upper left-hand quadrant of the current model, you see that active questioning type behavioral style? That's what's known as the driver. You'll also hear them called a dominator of some type, or being direct, or being decisive. That's your fundamental high D. Likewise, the active and accepting is the high I, called the influencer, sometimes called interactive, interested in people. These people are kind of outgoing and fun. Lower right-hand quadrant, accepting, thoughtful, steady, stable, secure. People are kind of the salt of the earth kind of people, what you want to be around, because they're just nice people to be around, the S's. That last quadrant, that lower left-hand quadrant, the high C, stands for conscientious. By the way, don't ever misspell that word in front of a high C. They're going to correct you if you spell it wrong. Sometimes called compliant or controlled, they're kind of rule followers. They make those rules to protect themselves. So can you finally see how this relates back to Marston's original model in terms of the environment? They're very, very similar, different perspective on it. I find myself using both to make sure I really identify a person's style.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, here's something really, really, really important. Disk is a marvelous, marvelous tool. But you can see in your stuff in front of you there, there are some things that disk does not measure. And it's really important to understand that while disk is a fantastic tool, it is not all-encompassing. It measures certain parts of a person's behavior, but not their personality, and not them overall, just certain key aspects. Why is this going to be important, do you guys think, that we understand that what DISC does and does not measure?
I think it's very valuable because, you know, I relate to coaching practice. My coaching practice is about working to change behavior, not personality, not attitudes. So, I mean, this is another good indicator for people to self-reflect on, including myself.
Good. Good.
This is Beth. The other reason that I think it's important to say what it doesn't measure, I actually use DISC and do DISC workshops, is that people can have the same DISC profile and seem really different because of one of these other components, whether it's values or political beliefs or cultural background, et cetera.
Yeah, very, very true.
That makes sense. That's
a great point.
So when you give DISC in front of groups, sometimes something odd happens with certain people in the audience. What might that be? Anybody take a wild guess?
Ask that question again, please, Dave.
When you give DISC with a group, sometimes something very odd happens with a member or two of the group. It relates back directly to this issue of what DISC does and does not measure. Any wild-ass guesses what that might be?
They may disagree with it. And if they're, like, conscientious or steady, they may say it's not exact enough.
Yeah. How could you possibly analyze me in 20 questions? That's ridiculous. Right? How could you put me into a box like that? You can't take my whole life and put it in a little box like this. It's unfair. Yeah, you're right. That would be. So I don't want to do that to you. So we want to just take the certain parts of your behavior, not all of you, a little bit, and identify those key things. So Dr. Marston would say that people are unique and people are different. But in some ways, they are predictably different. And that's the key here. We're going to take the things that we know about the person's behavior, things we can measure through DISC, use those to predict behavior, but we didn't measure everything about you, and we couldn't. We could take tests for weeks and not get everything about you. So if people have questions about, you know, how can you use a tool like this, and we talk about things that it does and doesn't measure, I always ask them, how'd you do in the math section? They go, what math section? You didn't finish the math? How'd you do in the science section? Do better on the science section? I don't recall a science section. Yeah, we're not trying to measure your intelligence. So as we use DISC, I want to question. I love the tool, but pay attention to what it doesn't measure. And sometimes we project some of these items here onto people's behaviors based on their DISC style, but you really can't. For example, we'll get into this more detail later on, but the high C, the conscientious, very detail-oriented. And they don't like making mistakes. Does that mean they're smart? No, it doesn't at all. Likewise, say the high C's are believe they're right because they've done all this research and things like that. The high D, for example, just thinks they're smart because they're high D's. And, you know, I'm always
thinking
about
the high D's laughing.
Yeah. At themselves, going, that would be me a little bit, yes. Think about it. We'll talk about D's more later on, but, you know, a high D with a low IQ is an unpleasant person to work for.
Yes, that would be true.
That would be true. So you're going to get people who have very similar DISC behavioral graphs, and they'll say, but we're as different as night and day. Sure you are, because you're a Democrat and you're a Republican. And you like this kind of humor? You like that kind of humor. You're very self-aware, you're not very self-aware.
Right.
Their behavioral styles look very much alike. All right. Take a look there at your charts, and you'll see the three page of the three graphs on it. You guys see that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So if you took your own DISC profile, you probably saw inside of your assessment book that, you know, page three has got or I think page five actually has the DISC graph on it. You're going to find all three of these graphs on the last page of the book, page 23. And I got to tell you guys that different DISC companies have different views of the importance of the three graphs. Okay? And Inscape Publishing, who I do use, talks quite a bit about the fact that they give you all three graphs, but from their perspective, graph three is the important graph. The one all the way in the right, the one that says change on it. But they'll give you all three. Other companies will sit there and tell you all three are important, and you should use all three to fully identify what a person's all about. We'll discuss that in detail in a few minutes here, but I will just tell you that one of the things I look at with a DISC behavioral profile with anybody is the three graphs. Notice here all three graphs are a consistent shape. They're not identical, they're consistent. I always look at page 23 of the Inscape book to look at these three graphs to look for just that thing. Are the three graphs consistent in shape? If they're not consistent in shape, that tells me I've got something here I need to focus on because something's not quite right. If all three are the same shape, I'm pretty sure I got a good profile of the individual involved. So just to let you guys know, if you study different developers other than Inscape, they're going to tell you something different about three graphs. Some only use two graphs. I like all three, but I agree that three is the key graph, but I want to see all three to make sure they're consistently shaped, put together the same way. Now, I want you to use this page and the one right after it where it says calculating scores. And just talk about that a minute here as what those things mean. So we're going to go through this in some detail in session number six. But for now, I want you guys to understand that when you went through and answered your assessment, you had to pick words that are most like you. You pick words that are least like you. And the words you chose as those that are most like you are used to calculate graph number one. And those you chose that were least like you created graph number two. And literally, the difference between graph one and graph two creates graph three.
Okay.
Now, there's some detail here that the PhDs are real familiar with that, you know, I'm not that smart about because I'm not a PhD in this kind of stuff. But I want to walk you through how these three are created so you get a feel for why they're important. So you'll see there in your notes that you have graph one is called the mask. And that's when you say, these words are most like me. So when you say to yourself or in the assessment, these words are most like me, what are you saying about yourself?
This is how I believe I'm perceived.
How I believe I'm perceived. Very important, yeah. Good. Other thoughts?
who you want to present?
There you go. Who I want to present. This is the mask I'm putting on to show the world who I am. I think these things are most like me.
Yeah, I would use that. I would connect that to, I do a, you know, stuff with authentic leadership. I would connect that to the iceberg and above the waterline and below the waterline. So that's a really great piece to tie in for me, making a connection about the mask, what's above my waterline.
And I actually use that very visual, that iceberg, when I do my workshops.
Yeah, I can. That really helps me connect with, see these three graphs.
Yeah, yeah. So this is the one that's most likely to change based on what I'm doing at that time. So
yeah.
I have to fit into a job that I'm really not suited to, but I need to do this thing effectively. So I may change my behaviors to be more effective. I'm not very detail-oriented, but I'm asked to do this accounting work. Ooh, I must make this thing balance. This is work for me. It's not normal, but I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do a good job at it. As I'm doing that, that may change how I answer the DISC assessment based on the fact that for the last 3 months, I've been doing accounting work. Okay? So graph two is called the core, and you see it there, it's based on the words you say are least like you. And you see here it says it's the least likely to change of all three graphs because these are your learned behaviors.
Makes sense.
They may come from your early childhood, they may come from your first boss, someone who had a big influence on you, and these are really at the core of who you are underneath it all. So what's easier, you think, to answer going through a profile? Which are the words that are most like me, or which are the words that are least like me?
Say that again.
Which is probably easier to identify as you go through your DISC assessment? Look at those words and say which ones are most, which ones are least. What's easier? These words are most like me, or these words are least like me?
This is for me. I would say least.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Me too.
Yeah, but you're right. The least ones are the easiest because we reject them so quickly. I'm kind of like that. I'm not at all like that. So these are the ones that are really at the core of who you are. We go through the profile together in some detail in weeks 5 and 6. You're going to see how that least like me relates back very directly to creating that graph 3 and who I really am underneath it all.
Dave,
okay.
This is
yes.
Bob. To some degree, I'm a certified MBTI practitioner. To some degree, when you talk about core, you start to get into a sense of self that's learned probably over many years and you know, more DNA involved here. Is there any correlation between least and an MBTI assessment?
Yeah, there is. The MBTI assessment, of course, is much more scientific. But there is definitely a correlation there between the two, especially as it relates to this core.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not certified to MBTI, but I have studied it quite a bit, and I have to admit I admire the heck out of it. But I will tell you just briefly, just for the group here that have just heard about MBTI, Myers-Briggs. Actually, we mentioned Dr. Belston earlier. When I was studying and decided to take a course in an assessment, you know, I asked Dr. Felston, I said, you're certified in both MBTI and DISC. Which one should I go after? And you have to love Dr. Felston. She goes, so, Dave, if I ask you to explain MBTI to me, how long will that take you? said, Jesus, you know, to do it right, you know, 2 days, and even then it's going to be confusing at the end. How long to explain disc to somebody? 10 minutes. She goes, okay, which one do you think you ought to use? Always the coach, Dr. Belston is. Always the coach. I love her. She is a wonderful lady. She's here in Denver where I am, so I have a chance to meet her in person and work with her sometimes. So anyway, all right, so the third graph is the mirror. And the mirror is the difference between the most responses and the least responses. And literally, as you calculate the graphs, you're going to be totaling up a number of most responses that fit the D category, and the most responses that fit the I category, and the S, and the C. And you'll also then total up which of the least responses are mostly the D, the I, the S, and the C. And as you do that do that math, and we'll say we'll do it together in the session number 6, that difference between the most and the least literally creates graph 3. So it combines those things that you've learned, you've always been involved with, that your core behaviors, and how you've learned to behave in public based on the recent things that are going on around you. It combines those things to give you the picture that is most closely related to the real you. Now, I say closely related to the real you because if the three graphs are in sync, what you're presenting to the outside world and who you are, really are very much in sync. If there's differences, that means there's something you're doing, most likely, that doesn't fit who you truly are. And it leaves you with a certain amount of discomfort. Let me just tell you a little story here. Working with a company a couple of years ago, and they hired me because the CEO said, I've got a really great team here, but you know what? We're not quite hitting all cylinders. I'm not sure what it is. Can you help me? And I said, sure. Gave them the DISC assessment. Went to the room with them. Talked about the group. And I said, so tell me about what you guys are doing and how you like your jobs, this kind of stuff. And everybody spoke up. Everybody was very interactive. And I said, so why am I here? And CEO said, because we're just not quite there. We're so good, we're not quite where we have to be, and I can't figure it out. Oh. Well, let's try and figure it out. So I turned to one of the guys, one of the VPs, and I said, so, Bob, how long have you hated your job? CEO stopped me and goes, whoa, Dave, no. Bob's really, really good. He loves what he's doing, and he's fantastic on it. I turned over to Bob and said, just looked at Bob and said, Bob, he goes, I hate this job. I've always hated this job. But it has to get done. And the CEO asked me to do it, and I'm a team player, so I said I'd do it. But boy, I really do hate it. The CEO's jaw has, of course, just dropped to the floor. I said, well, that's interesting. So, Judy, how long have you hated your job? Oh, how'd you figure this out? I can do this, but I really don't like doing it. It's not what I'm good at. My comments came from discrepancy between the three graphs because it showed the way they're behaving in public did not match their core self. While they were able to adapt their behaviors and appear to be doing the right things for the best of the team, it wasn't who they really were. So that's the value of all three of these graphs together and seeing if this person's in sync or not. So look at the next page, and you'll see that comparing the three graphs there, you see the three graphs there are very, very different. Mm. It's not like they're close, and you say, well, Dave, are they kind of? No, these are very, very different. This is a real, by the way, this is a real person that I gave these something to, and they gave me this graph, and I went, ooh. We got some stuff to talk about here, don't we? This told me they were not comfortable with what they happened to behave themselves, how they had to do things. And the more disparate these graphs are, the bigger the challenge really is. Now, all three of them have high Ds, which tells you something, but everything else is very, very different. Look how low the sea is in graphs 3 and in graphs 2, and then graph 1 is up above there. So that's a sign there's a problem with this behavior I need to work on. Another example we have there with you, just again comparing the graphs, again shows, in this case, the primaries are even different. So all I got to do is see the graphs, and I know, okay, I got work cut out for me here. Let's dig into this. Versus all three are in sync. Now I can coach based on what I know their behaviors are versus some kind of a problem. Questions, comments before I go on?
Which is naturally, I guess, the question I have is, so next steps with that when you see the graphs that are different, and you know, how do you necessarily interpret those, and what's the tendencies there, and then where do you go from there with that?
Yeah, my analysis just told me that there's something there I need to ask about, and so the question, you know, based on what you're coaching them on, question becomes, so what's going on in your life right now?
Mm-hmm.
And again, very open-ended questions. If they're there about their job, what's going on in your job right now?
Yeah.
You guys all know, though, that home life and business life definitely tie together. So I try and draw out the disparities, and I would prefer, rather than say, whoa, your graphs are out of sync, you're really messed up. What I try and say is, oh, okay, so let's just talk about your life. I don't say the three graphs show me something. I just say, let's explore this. If all three are in sync, we can go right to their agenda. The reason they hired me, if all three are out of sync, I want to know what got them out of sync. I want them to tell me about it versus my telling them. Make sense?
Yeah. Thank you.
Good. So the next page you've got there is something called the Johari window.
Uh-huh.
There's a fascinating story behind the Johari window. Anybody know the story behind the Johari window, where it was invented and who created it, and a fascinating story here?
I forget their last names, but I know that the first names were Joe and Harry.
Exactly.
Two guys.
Yeah. And that's not a great story, but it's a good story. Joe and Harry created this window. And it really is a good analogy for coaching. This was invented back in 1954, and the idea behind it was that there, as you and I meet and talk, there are certain things that you and I know about each other. You know it, and I know it. And that becomes the basis of our relationship. And it may start off extremely small. And the smaller it is, the harder it's for us to have a really good conversation. We get to know each other and trust each other because we don't know that much. Now, if you use myself as an example here, you guys know about me what you read in CTA's literature. You may have gone to their website. You may have gone to my website.
Right.
What you see there are just the things that I'm really willing to show you. Or that I think you need to know to consider me as your coach or your instructor for this class. Now, the things in that lower left-hand quadrant where it says the mask hidden, those are things that I know about me, but you don't. They're hidden from your view. Now, they may be hidden intentionally because I don't want you to know these things, but maybe you just don't know me well enough yet. And as you know me more, I'm willing to divulge more about you. To you, about who I really am. The more I divulge, the more things turn into you know and I know, and the bigger the arena gets. Now, the blind spots are over there. There are things that you can see about me that I don't see about myself. Use some simple examples. We're out someplace in public. We're having lunch. I have, you know, broccoli in my teeth. And I'm talking to you, and I'm trying to impress you because I want a job or we want a date, whatever it's going to be. And you're saying to yourself, you've got broccoli in your teeth, dude. It doesn't, you know, just not quite right. So you know it, but I don't know it. Or you look at my suit and you go, wow, that tie is incredibly ugly with that shirt. That is just not good at all. I don't think it's a problem, but you see it and go, wow, that is not good. So as you begin to tell me some of these things and help me uncover my blind spots, it can make me more effective. As a coach, as you help someone see the things they don't see about their own life, you're uncovering their blind spots. You don't know and I don't know. That's the future. You don't see it. Tomorrow I'm going to win the lottery. You don't know it. I don't know it. But the idea of coaching is to use coaching to help move things from the blind spots and the mask into the arena, to expand that arena so we're both talking about the same things, we're both aware of the same things, the things that you've had hidden from me that I'm now aware of, and those blind spots that I'm aware of that you weren't, bring those things out in the open. DISC allows you to do that very easily, and it gives you a nice common language to use to make that happen. We're going to discuss that quite a bit in the upcoming weeks here. Now, I know we're about 2-3 minutes over time here. The last page here, we're not really going to discuss. I just want to introduce you to the idea. This is called the behavioral style chart. It looks very complicated. We're going to cover it in great detail in the next couple of sessions. But I want to give you guys the thought now to start working on memorizing that graph, to be able to draw it yourself on a moment's notice as you explain what it really means to people. That's one of the things we're going to talk about here over the next couple of sessions together. It's where I got a lot of business from myself over the course of my practice, is simply literally drawing that on the back of a napkin or a blank piece of paper or on a chalkboard and telling folks what DISC was all about as I drew that. It's a very powerful way to get people to understand what DISC can do for you. So we're going to refer to it all throughout the class. You'll see it in every handout session I pass out. So start working on memorizing what that looks like and what it means. All right.
Okay.
Questions, comments?
I would like to follow up. I don't know if it has to be now what I've got going on in my life right after the end of this, but I would like to next week in one of the sessions, I'll come back and ask you, and I would like for homework just to stay around and chat, preferably on Wednesday, about marketing and what you're doing with it. That would be really helpful. So my question really is, are you willing to do that next Wednesday?
Yes, I'm willing to do it. Let me just pull up next Wednesday, make sure I can do it next Wednesday. I should be able to. It's evening time here. It should be easy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. This is Glenn, by the way, over in Hawaii. And my other one is just a comment. Thank you for answering that. I appreciate your flexibility there, Dave. And my last one is a comment. I just appreciated what you shared about Laura. I had some opportunities to work with her. I've never met her personally, but working with her over the phone and over the computer, she's been a joy. I have a lot of respect for her.
Totally agree. I love Laura. Really do. All right. Other questions or comments? Was this helpful to you guys tonight?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, very much so.
How soon do we get the next set of homework?
The next set of slides?
Yes.
I'll send them out to you actually in the next half hour.
Okay.
Oh, well.
And you should have, and I'll talk to also CTA about getting that revised catalyst out there because if he's in the wrong one, it's going to be a problem.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll give you guys a new download link for that as well.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a great night. We'll talk.
Hello?
Night.